You're listening to West Virginia Morning. I'm John Cantese. It took more than 2 weeks after its passage in the House of Delegates for the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act to appear on the agenda in the state Senate. Senators in the chamber's Judiciary Committee took the bill up late Friday evening and, as Ashton Mara reports, sent the Senate a new version of the bill.
The West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act, called RFRA for short, is now the Religious Freedom Protection Act as approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Charles Trump is the committee's chair.
If you wanted to call it RFPA, I suppose that would be okay, although that is hard to say, I acknowledge.
In all seriousness, Trump says the bill has endured substantive changes since it made its way across the rotunda, but he says those changes were necessary. First, the title change.
It's not Restoration Act here in West Virginia because we have nothing to restore. The strict scrutiny and compelling state interest test that is in RFRAs, which have been enacted in other states and at the federal level, did not have to be restored in West Virginia. That was our law under the Constitution, under the cases that have been decided.
The bill maintains what Trump says is its main purpose.
It's the sole intention of the legislature to codify the test under which courts are required to evaluate cases when there are allegations that people's sincerely held religious beliefs are being substantially burdened by governmental action.
But it does include more changes than just the title. The bill narrows the definition of substantially burdened and allows plaintiffs to collect attorney's fees and court costs, but not awards to compensate them for injuries or other losses. The committee version of the bill adds further protections for churches and clerics, providing that neither can be compelled by the state to perform any service or ceremony or recognize any marriage that is contrary to their faith. Trump says his committee has also now added language to make it very clear that the bill cannot be used as a tool to discriminate against any person or group. That, he says, was his main objective when directing the rewrite of the bill.
I endeavored to make it as clear as I possibly could that we are not saying religious rights trump everything else. We're not saying other rights are exempt from any trumping by religious rights or religious freedoms. We are trying to give the courts the mechanism by which they determine the balance on a case-by-case basis.
As the bill was debated in the House of Delegates, Democratic members attempted to add in express provisions to protect municipalities that have approved non-discrimination ordinances. Democrats also attempted to add that language into the Senate Judiciary version, but the amendment narrowly failed. Trump says if a similar amendment is offered on the chamber floor, he doesn't think he can support it.
The whole purpose of the bill is to create a test rather than to prejudge winners and losers when religious rights and other rights come into conflict. And they do, clearly they do. I mean, I think that's why we see people feeling passionately on both sides of the case of whether these laws should be enacted.
Such an amendment, Trump says, could predetermine the outcome of a case. There are several members of the body who still feel the bill does not go far enough to prevent discrimination should it become state law, and several other senators who would rather have continued with the House version of the bill. The committee substitute for House Bill 4012 was reported to the full chamber Saturday and will likely be up for a vote Wednesday. If the Judiciary Committee's version of the bill is approved by the Senate, it will return to the House to consider the amendments before making its way to the governor. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Members of the House will vote on a bill today that would ban a commonly used second trimester abortion method. Liz McCormick reports.
Senate Bill 10 bans dilation and evacuation, or DND, abortions, but allows those procedures to take place in cases of medical emergencies. Some doctors, however, have testified before lawmakers that the bill takes away one of the safest options for women and interferes with the doctor-patient relationship. Delegates would have amended the bill Saturday, but after a motion from Majority Leader Darrell Coles, the bill was pushed to third reading with pending amendments. As of Saturday evening, only Delegate Nancy Guthrie, a Democrat from Kanawha County, had offered an amendment. It adds a provision to allow for an elective D&E abortion if a woman was a victim of incest or rape if the rape is reported to a law enforcement agency. The amendment and the bill will be voted on in the House Monday. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning at 7:49. There is a wind advisory in effect in the north until around 10 a.m. this morning. And today we will see a chance of morning rain continue. We'll have some gradual clearing in the afternoon. Highs will be in the 50s today.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
Last week, a collaborative project between West Virginia State University, the University of Sharjah in the United Arab Emirates, and the World Health Organization brought thousands of scholars, researchers, professionals, and students to Dubai for a conference titled Solutions for Better Life. Carol Lofton sat down with West Virginia Commissioner of Public Health, Rahul Gupta, who was a keynote speaker at the conference, to talk about the experience.
There's a lot of focus now on the social determinants of health. The fact that it is no longer just the medical care model, but the environment in which people live, learn, play, pray, grow up. Those all factors make an impact from both poverty and education to a number of social factors, behavioral factors that impact health.
Is it important to have a voice from West Virginia at an international health conference like this? And if so, why? Why is it particularly important from here?
Well, significant. It is very, very important because, first of all, it tells people that West Virginia is playing a role in international health and international solutions for a better life. We're bringing our experts to talk about it. One of the presenters, somebody from West Virginia State University, presented the similarity, the remarkable similarities across countries, which is very similar to West Virginia as well, is the challenge of changing behavior, the lifestyles. There are, at the end of the day, a lot more similarities than our differences.
Do you think, this is something that I've wondered for a while since moving to West Virginia, are some of the health concerns that we have here, are they more akin to something that might be in a third world country than they would be in wealthier parts of the United States? Does that kind of put us in better position to understand what's going on in on a world stage?
So one of the things we discussed was actually the importance of culture to health. And no matter where you live and which level of poverty or lack of less poverty that you live in, I think it's very important to understand the local culture. There's a very special emphasis on that during the conference. And I think it does help West Virginians to understand much better cultures across the globe because we have our own culture. So we saw and we really observed that we were neither talking down or talking at, but it was actually a very healthy mixture of understanding the cultures of various presenters across the globe. We had presenters from Egypt, presenters from Jordan, presenters from Canada. Obviously, the regional director of the World Health Organization presented as well. So we had a number of international presenters, and we were able to, once again, cross-fertilize the ideas and cultures, but at the same time recognize that cultural understanding and respect of those cultures is critical to making any successful future steps in changing the health behaviors, ultimately impacting the causes of death.
Gupta said he was asked to be a judge for a number of competitions in which faculty across the globe presented ideas for global health solutions. One of his favorites was a way of social networking that connected people interested in physical activity, for instance, a pickup soccer game, with others in their community interested in the same activity.
I think some of the most exciting ideas were, in addition to innovation in information technology and the app development and a way to communicate across the globe, I think the biggest change I saw was that this conference brought together a number of researchers from fields that were often not limited in health. It was a very nice hybrid of information technology, health, as well as understanding the future of what it's going to take us to continue to have a healthy environment with focus on climate change and a number of other contemporary factors.
Is there any takeaway that we should know, being a population here or listeners that might be hearing you talk about this international conference?
Sure. I think the most important takeaway is that we're not alone. We are a community that we're able to offer something in this conference from our researchers and our presenters, as well as a number of exchange of ideas. The other is, of course, that we express, and so did they, that we like to continue this relationship going forward. So we may be organizing such a conference here in West Virginia in the near future to be able to bring all those leaders across the world to West Virginia to have such a conference.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation.
That was Kara Lofton speaking with West Virginia Commissioner of Public Health Raul Gupta last week for Appalachia Health News. Huntington lawyer Paul Farrell recently decided to put himself on the ballot in West Virginia as a candidate for president. Clark Davis reports that what might have begun as a joke for Farrell is no longer a laughing matter.
Paul Farrell Jr. is a medical malpractice lawyer in Huntington. He's never been involved in politics before and never thought he would be. But he says he worries more and more about the state he's from and calls home, West Virginia. On Sunday mornings, Farrell, along with his two brothers, have breakfast at his father's house.
We play around with the New York Times crossword and we talk. And we were talking about politics. And it was my mother who said she couldn't bring herself to vote for Hillary. Now, she's probably as accurate as a reflection of West Virginia's sentiment as anybody I've known. And when she said she couldn't vote for Hillary, my brother Sean said, "Hey, Paul, why don't you run?"
Farrell says he has no dreams of being elected, and he has no desire to be on the ballot in other states. He says in the last primary election, the Democrats in the state opted for the none-of-the-above choice, which happened to be Keith Judd, a convicted felon currently serving a 17-and-a-half-year sentence in a Texas federal prison. Judd won 41% of the vote. Farrell says at least if they vote the other option, this time it'll be him.
It started out as, you know, as maybe a joke. And I know a lot of people may think that this is a joke or that I'm doing it for the notoriety or the publicity. But when people vote, I don't think they're necessarily going to be voting for Paul Farrell Jr. I think they're going to vote for the idea of what Paul Farrell Jr. represents. And that is a vote of dissent.
Farrell believes many West Virginians will vote to dissent. He has two brothers that work in the coal industry, and his father is a Cabell County Circuit Judge, Paul T. Farrell Sr. Farrell says not enough politicians on the national level care about the coal industry. He points out that the national convention not only decides the nominee, it decides the Democratic platform. He says that's what he hopes to effect with the delegates the winner of the nomination in the state takes to the national convention in Philadelphia in July.
So by sending delegates from West Virginia, even if the ultimate choice is going to be Hillary or Bernie, at least we can have some input that our platform must include some type of economic investment in our infrastructure for us to be able to survive and live in West Virginia and raise our families.
Farrell doesn't think priorities have been straight in Washington for a while. He says coal is overregulated and complains there's no contingency plan for economically gutted regions in the state.
We waged war on Iraq. We destroyed its economy. And then we spent billions rebuilding its infrastructure. So what my point is that if we're going to be rebuilding anything, we should be rebuilding power plants and investing in clean technology in West Virginia.
Farrell says even if he does receive the most votes for the Democratic nominee for president from the state, he won't be getting into politics in the city or the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And we're interested in your comments, so make sure you send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. And you can follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara, our director is Teresa Wills, and I'm John Cantese. Have a good morning.